Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Above the Bar podcast, where each week we belly up to the bar with a new guest, find out what they do, who they are, and what makes them great. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Alrighty, folks, welcome back to the Above the Bar podcast. This is great. We already got people live on Instagram. My son and my best friend checked on Instagram already. This is great because this is a new thing that you can go live on Instagram through StreamYard. I love it. So we're belling up to the bar today, folks. And if you're joining us on our live video right now, you're probably thinking, oh, I've checked into the Beard Network. And we've got those guys on right now, Scott and the folks over at the Beard Network, but you're not. You're actually on the Above the Bar podcast and joining me. And I look, if you're ever involved with ChatGPT and you're kind of playing with it and trying to figure out how ChatGPT works, there is nothing better than the fact that with chat, you can just start keep telling it, no, make this douchier, make this more. No, I want to sound like more of a horrible human being. Can you put this in the tone of the worst person that you possibly can? And chat just will be like, all right, if that's what you want. So the overlord of military financial freedom is joining us. And Dave, I'm going to butcher your last name. So you want to fix it before I butcher it, or you just want to hear what I said?
No, I think it's hilarious that when I logged in, you were telling your friend that you didn't know how to say my name on the phone. And then when you got on, you forgot to ask.
I completely did. So joining us,
there you go.
Joining us from the land of misery, and that's Missouri, if you didn't know that. It's David, the military millionaire. Perret. Hey, Perret.
Yep. Yeah. Thanks, brother. I appreciate you. I went and grabbed with Jefferson's Ocean.
Jefferson's. Okay. Educate me on Jefferson's Ocean. Mm. I've never had that. Is that local to where you're at?
No, it is. I first had it at Top of the Rock, which is Johnny Morris Bass Pro founder restaurant here in the Branson area. They're a small company. What they do, you know, everyone has their famous story, but what they do is while the bourbon is being aged, they actually put it on the back of research vessels that I believe the vessels they stick it on are like, they're watching like sharks off the Atlantic. Okay. But they basically put it in a barrel, stick it in the hull of a ship, and let it just kind of travel around in the ocean for however many years.
I've heard about that.
So it's got a little salty. They're good. You know, it's a cool story. It's a cool drink. And it was the last little bit of the bottle. So I got the double shot and an empty bottle now.
I like it. Well, have you ever seen they did that with like a wine? There was like a wine company that did the same thing off the coast of somewhere. They put the bottles of wine down in the ocean and allowed the rocking of the ocean to turn the bottles and to do all these things. And everyone who tasted it was like, this tastes like shit.
This is actually a decent bourbon, so I'm glad that it doesn't taste like shit. But
yeah, they were like, this does not taste good. Well, if you're not joining us live to see what Dave's got going on here, Dave and I are going to be talking, and I forgot to mention this, Dave. If you see me looking to my left, I promise you I'm not ignoring you and checking my email. That's where my other screen is. I don't have enough space to put it in front of me. I keep it to my left. It's like, because I have a TV. I have TVs I want to watch, you know, to get
No worries at all. I'm not judging. I'm easy.
You should judge. We're Marines. We judge each other the entire time. there's Staff Sergeant Oliver. Oh, that's fancy. My best friend, Ken. We're going to be getting into talking about purchasing of real estate, how Dave did it, how he started off with, if I'm remembering it right, one duplex and then turned that into hundreds of units. I think this is, I can tell you right now, you can plug this in your brain housing group, because this is the one thing that I hear from everybody who's done this. And I got to do our house cleaning real quick, but they all say the same thing. Hey, you can buy real estate for free. You can get it for nothing. And I'm always the same way. I'm like, look, man, I bought a lot of houses in my time. If it was a way to do it for free, not selling ass on the corner, I'd already figured it out. So we need to figure out how this all works. And look, folks, real quick, if you love podcasts and you want to listen to a good podcast, because it's not this one, this is just me rattling off at people, make sure you check out the Outlaws podcast. That's George and I almost called him Heine George. I am such a horrible person. And you can tell him that I said that. I almost called him Heine. But they talk sports. They're down in Poughkeepsie. They like sell out. They like have live events and sell out the venues.
That's
They're really good at what they do. And now George is into like RC cars, like serious, like dirt track style RC cars. And they look super cool. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, I feel like I need to get into his hobby because he's like killing it out there. Make sure you check out Outlaw Blitz there, folks. They're amazing. But let's go ahead and get our house cleaning done. As always, folks, over my right shoulder. Look like Kelsey too. I just realized that.
I bought his jersey recently because I've been told that so much lately. Dude,
like, it's kind of creepy. I just realized it. You know, as long as you don't look like Travis, who's a douche.
Dude, the two of them are hilarious. Their podcast is great. I don't listen to the full thing, but the clips they put out, love it. But
Jason's great. Travis is a douche. straight douche bugger. Over my right shoulder, folks, as we always talk about, we got the big board for Sticker and a Cause. If you got something you believe in, something that you're trying to promote and you want folks to know about it, reach out to me on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitch, X, Instagram, TikTok, even the email. It's all the above the bar podcast at gmail.com. Reach out. Let me know what you got going on. I'll read all about you live on the air and put your sticker on the board so everybody can see it each week on our show at Sticker and a Cause. Now, the other thing, we got to talk about who's paying the bills around here, and that's Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. If you need some windows, you need window treatments, depending upon where you live, there's nothing I've ever seen like when people tell you, oh, I want all my windows to be wide open and nothing on them, till you realize that you're in a fishbowl, and as you walk past your window in the morning and the 85-year-old little lady who's walking her dog is waving at you as you're in your boxers in the morning, and you realize, I've got to get these covered. Well, make sure you reach out to Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. You let them know that you're there to belly up to the bar. They're going to give you 15% off of that order right off the top. That's Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. That's one I should make you try to pronounce right there, Dave. It's spelled Coxsackie. It looks
Coxsackie.
It looks just like Coxsackie. It's pronounced Coxsackie. It looks like Coxsackie, though. It's a horrible name. So, all right. Well, I mean, make sure I got this. I'm going to make sure I got your bio completely right there, Dave. 13 years in the Marine Corps. I'm going to guess you're not in the reserves anymore.
You know, up until about 2 weeks ago, I was technically in the reserves doing the IMA program, you know, like 1 month a year and then the other 11 months.
Maybe show up. What is it? I'm a maybe show up.
Yeah. One of those guys. Well, it was like, you know, you do 1 month a year, but you don't have to do the weekly or the weekend drills. And then apparently I got dropped to the IRR like 2 weeks ago and no one told me. So, yeah.
They just didn't need you anymore, huh?
I guess. I don't know. My command was retarded. You know,
they with most reserve commands.
Dude, it was so bad. Like, I have a buddy who's like one of the directors for like the SMCR side, like high level lieutenant colonel. And he's like, dude, your command, like everything they've done is wrong. I'm like, well, that's perfect, but it also just cost me my educational benefit transfer. So kind of burnt out on it. So,
well, what was your MOS?
Motor T guy.
21 or 31?
30, well, 37 by the time I got out, but yeah, 30. That was a driver
operator.
No, 37 is just the staff and CO side. So,
okay.
But yeah, I was never any of the fancy stuff. I was just a typical 31. And then I got stuck on recruiting duty. I did, all the boring shit.
Wait a sec. What year did you go in?
Oh, wait.
Oh, okay. You're just a baby.
Yeah. That's it.
I went in 94 as a 21.
Oh, there you go. Wrencher.
I was a horrible mechanic. I broke more than I ever fixed.
So do all the operators.
Yeah, I was bad at it. And then I lap moved to avionics on 53. Yeah, it was all bad. Ken said, that's 01 admin for you. Yeah, listen, 001. You know, man, I could not. Have you ever seen an 01 run a PFT? I've never seen one run a PFT.
No, but I see them in the gym lifting. They're all swole.
Yeah, and never run one. What's up, Ice Wolf? Hey, look, folks, if you love getting like really cool stuff, this is how Ice Wolf and I met, is through DCD Collects. Check those guys out. Y'all know Doug. He's been on several times. He supports the Motor T community, 8 years syscom. You know, great stuff there. So you were a Motor T guy, and you started out, but when I was reading your bio, and again, correct me if I get something wrong, because I'm trying to go a little bit off of memory here as I'm reading my notes and skimming through them. You kind of, you were broke as a joke. Like we're not talking like somebody was like, "Here, son, here's some money. Let's get into the real estate game." That wasn't you. You were a typical Marine, not much going on, not a lot of money. And you decided you're going to buy a duplex.
Yeah. I took my 18 or 20 grand that I saved up in Afghanistan and quickly bought a 88 F-250, a brand new Harley, two tattoos, a whole bunch of girlfriends, and shitty Acura Integra. And then next thing I know, I'm in more debt than money in my pocket. And I tried out for MARSOC and blew out my knee. And the Marine Corps was like, "The next best thing is recruiting duty." Like, oh, perfect.
What are you out of?
Springfield, Missouri. That's kind of how I got stuck here. I met my then wife and here and kind of ended up coming back here.
Did you know Chris Scobie?
Mm-mm. No.
Because Scobie was in Missouri. I'm 95% sure, because I met him in 2009, 2010. I'm almost absolutely, because I was in 8412.
So I would have, there you go. So I would have, 2009, 2010, I would have been in Little Rock. I enlisted out of Little Rock in 2008. So I didn't make it to recruiting duty until 13.
Oh, that's right.
You joined it. But during that time, if you knew, Jeff Pauly, he retired as a Master Guns 8412. He ran this station like 07, 08.
No, but not all. 8412s were like a really odd community. Like, I was first district, I was fourth district and then first district. And really, like, you're either first or fourth, and you might go down to Paris Island or you might go out to California. But you really, like, you didn't leave your, like, first and fourth really didn't let go of guys, because of the type of ground it was.
Yeah.
And then people would come to us and they'd be like, I'm here for recruiting. I really recruited everyone where I was at. And we're like, "Shut up, you suck. Come on."
Well,
you're like, "Where am I?"
You would appreciate this then, being a 12. So I got here in 13. By 15, I was the staffing CIC as a sergeant for 9th Marine Corps District. I was the only sergeant running a station in the state, and the only sergeant running a station of all sergeants in the entire district. And when I left, we were at 132% of contracting and 128% of shipping. And we were station of the year. And it's hilarious to me. I'll never forget how much fun it was to be told that I was not eligible to be an 8412 because I was not a staff sergeant.
I love it.
But I was the staffing COIC of the year. And I got to be like,
and you weren't meritoriously promoted.
Well, so I've always been a waiter. You know, I got to tape out. So
tape out. Okay.
So I mean, I did.
You'd have been a perfect 12. You'd have been amazing.
That's what I'm saying. 35 pull-ups, perfect crunches, 25-minute PFT. But I had to tape out. My sergeant major didn't like it, so he shredded my package.
I know, Cody. It is kind of weird. Like, so my skunk's in the middle, and his skunks are on the side. It's very odd.
Don't get me started on that. I have. How inappropriate are we allowed to get on this show?
You can get as inappropriate as you want to. I mean,
I have been my running joke is that the juices that are produced by females are
your
like
flavor bleach. Saver right there.
Yeah, it's like bleach, so it stains your.
Well, see, I would look at it the other way. Mine bleached it white. See, but I don't know what all this is. I guess that's where they've held on or something like that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like, brother, and I agree with Ken just talking to you. If you got into the real estate game, you'd have been a great 8412. I mean, the 12 community is it really is unique. If I'll tell you one more 12 story, if you want to know how dangerous that community is and how sergeant majors and majors will sell their soul for a good 8412. I was a staff sergeant, and you might know this name, Gary Buck. Sergeant Major Buck.
Name sounds familiar. But
he was the Sergeant Major for Paris Island for a while there. He's actually, I think last time I saw him, he was actually living down there for a while, stayed on the island. He's actually, for a while, he was even in some of the recruiting videos as a staff sergeant or gunny. Something happened, and I was at an 84-12 conference. I was still an 11. They were getting ready to make me a 12, so they invited me out to the conference. I get out there, and my phone's ringing, and he's like, "Hey, Staff Sergeant, you got this kid. You need to do something." I'm like, "Sergeant Major, I'm not doing shit." He's like, "What the f- did you say?" I said, "Sergeant Major, I'm not doing shit. I'm not doing it." Whatever it was, I was like, "I'm not doing it." He was like, "Do you know who you're talking to right now?" I said, "I know exactly who the fuck I'm talking to. Do you know who you're talking to?" And he was like, and at that time, Master Guns Mac, he had just left as the district contact team chief. Like, this is how he got done dirty. District contact team chief, back to being an NCOIC, running a station.
And you know they pick a shit station because they always 12s never run winning stations. The moment you turn a station winning, you get sent to the shithole to fix that one too.
Obviously, you've seen The Office before.
My best man at my wedding was a 12.
He was in Scranton, and he's hearing the conversation. He's like, "Murph, what's going on?" I was like, I think I might have just screwed up. He goes, "What happened?" I told him the story. He goes, "Don't worry about it. I got it. I was meritoriously promoted to gunny the whole 9 yards." And yeah, so you're in this position. You realize you got all this debt. You've spent all your hard-earned, was it a reenlistment bonus? Is that what it was? Was it one of those good ones, like reenlisted overseas and like kept tax-free and all that?
No. It was just deployment money. I didn't do anything on deployment because I wasn't on a FOB, but I wasn't on like anything big, right? So
how do we go from all this debt, broke as a joke, to going, "I'm buying this duplex"?
The magical book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, read
Robert Kiyosaki.
Yeah, I've actually had him on my podcast now. That dude, really, dude, I would drink with him in a heartbeat.
To introduce me to him.
Yeah,
I really want to meet him.
Yeah, I will do the best. I don't have an email for him, but I have an email for his team.
That's fine with me.
So yeah, I'll shoot you an email. He's God, he's nuts. I love it.
I've read Rich Dad Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant. We have Rat Race upstairs, and we play Rat Race.
Yeah,
I'm all about it. It'll open your eyes to some shit that when I play that with people that have never played it, and they're like, "I don't care. I'll borrow an extra $5,000 to get this place. It's only going to pay me at $300. Come on. So Kiyosaki, you read Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, another Marine and a pilot.
Yep. And I went down the rabbit hole with the Purple Library. And then I stumbled into Bigger Pockets, which is another real estate forum. Started reading some of their books, listening to their podcast. And, you know, it just kind of, timing lined up. My lease was coming up on my apartment. I was like, "Well, let me look around." And then I found a duplex that I was like, "Dude, the mortgage on this duplex would be $50 more than my monthly rent on this apartment." And there's a tenant on the other side paying $475 a month. So if I'm paying $550 for an apartment, I'm going to be paying $585 for, you know, to own the place. And the tenant on the other side is paying $475. I was like, I'm up $400, $430 bucks. You know, why not? What's the worst that could happen? So I bought it, moved in, and then when I moved out, that thing started paying me like $200 a month, and I was like, "Wow, this is cool. How do I do it again?" And to show you, like, when we talk about broke and bad financials, the only reason I could buy that duplex is because I was sitting at a bar drinking a beer, having a burger, and this dude comes in the bar, and he's like, "Hey, who's got the Harley outside?" I was like, "Oh, that's me." And he's like, "You might want to come outside." And he was hammered, and he had been parked next to it. And he had turned the wheel and stomped the gas and basically just crushed it with his truck backing out. And he launched it across the parking lot under another vehicle. And, I mean, he must have hit it fucking hard. And he's like, "I own a car dealership. I can't afford to put this on my dealership's insurance because I've already had you know, an incident this year. Can I just cut you a check for whatever you think the bike's worth? And I was like, I was going to list it for $11,000. He's like, all right, cool. Cuts me the check, hands it to me, walks off. I was like, or you said, come to my office the next day. So I go to his office the next day and pick it up. And then, yeah, I took the bike to the Harley dealership and was like, what can you give me for the rest of this? They gave me like $3,000. Well, the bike was originally $15,000. So I'm like, I win.
Yeah, you're doing good.
Yeah. So then I took that money and I paid $4,000 for like the down payment and then another $1,000 for
closing costs.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was all into it for like $4,200. It was like an $81,000 duplex in 2017. And, you know, it just, that was it. If I hadn't done that, I would have, I don't know. I don't think I would have been able to come up with $4,000 to close on the property. Pretty sad.
God was watching out after you in the most odd way. Yep. And look, there's another 31 that just popped up, Corey. So he's a 31. So, you know,
we're the best. What?
He was one of my, him and I were served together back in 94. He's in Dallas. So you buy this duplex, you realize, okay, I have rich dad, poor dad. I have a little bit of disposable income, but how does that turn into, I mean, are you okay saying the total number of units right now?
I would be. I don't even know.
It's over 100.
Hang on. Let me see if I've still got. If I've still got this open.
And look, folks, as you're listening to Dave and I, if you've got any questions, make sure you throw those questions out. If you look up from military to millionaire online, you look it up on Facebook, you look it up on LinkedIn, you'll find David very easy. Last name is P-E-R-E. You know, check out what he's got going on. If you're finding him through us or us through him, make sure you're liking and sharing. It might sound a little cliche to be like, share, subscribe, but listen to me, folks. That's how his message gets out. That's how our message gets out. So like this for the four of you that are watching at this moment, don't be cheesy, hit the like and make sure you share it everywhere you can. All the yard sale sites you can find. So what's the number at right now?
It is at, let's see.
I don't know if I have a drum roll.
So I sold a bunch of single families this year. So if we're talking the properties that I have a controlling interest in, it's 98 doors. But then if you're talking about, there's another 946 that I'm like a general partner in.
Did you say 946?
Yeah. So that's seven apartment complexes, but two deals with apartment complexes and then a hotel that I helped raise money for. And I run the investment side. So I sold a bunch of houses to go more into the bigger stuff. And then we actually sold a 15 unit apartment this year. So I probably sold 30 or 40 doors this year.
This is for you.
You know, I got tiger blood, man.
I mean, you got tiger blood, bro. I mean, that's all you can say about that. And that is 100% for you right there. So how do we get from a single duplex, young Marine, just happy you can pay bills to 98 personal investments, 940 some, you know, investments you're involved in? I can't even fathom in my head what that is on a monthly income ratio for you. And especially, and guess what, folks, passive income doesn't get itself beat up at 33% like your paycheck does, which I always like to throw this out to people. You want to know math that's really kind of crazy, folks? You know, everybody's like, my taxes are crazy. I've been working since I was 14. I'm 47 years old right now. Since I was 14, I've always lost a third of my paycheck. Somehow, as my taxes keep going up, I always lose a third of my paycheck. You figure out how that math works. How people go, oh, taxes are crazy now. They will always take a third of your paycheck. That's what it always is. So how do we get from there to there? Walk me through that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, once I was sold, it was, how do I buy another one? So, I mean, well, I got stationed in Hawaii. I couldn't afford to buy there, so I was still looking in Missouri. I was writing letters back to Missouri. My second deal, this guy calls and he's like, I have a duplex. I don't want to sell it, but I've got a 10 unit. I'll sell you. And I was like, well, I'm uncomfortable with that, but I'll at least look at the numbers. And then the numbers were great. So I was like, all right, yeah, fuck it. Let's see what happens. And so I talked to a few friends. They all said the numbers looked good to them too. So I went for it, and I ended up, you know, I first off, I have actually bought a property with no money, but
hold on. We're going to talk about that in a minute because I really want to understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, but I did this one. I bought 5% down. So I bought the 10 unit. Okay. I got the seller to carry 10% back as the down payment. And then, the bank paid 85. So the bank lent up to 85%, seller carried 10, and I was up to, you know, I basically put 5% in. So I bought this duplex. I put $10,962 down and then had all the payments, and it paid the mortgage and everything else. Sold it 4 years to the day later so I bought it for $212 and I sold it for $340. So yeah, it was a great deal.
Nice little nut you got out of that.
That one was fun. Yeah. It's probably my favorite deal to this day, 'cause it was my second one. It was a hugely uncomfortable, out of my comfort zone, and it worked great.
But you know what, you talk about that, and it can sound cliche, but I don't care. The more uncomfortable you are, the more successful it is. Yeah. It just really is. You know, what's that saying? You know, diamonds are made out of heat and pressure. I've never seen a comfortable winner. One of my favorite lines, and I always forget the boxer who said it, but it's still, I love the lines. Champions don't sleep on silk sheets. Somebody actually asked me, you'll appreciate this as a Marine. I had somebody say to me recently, well, why does the Air Force sleep in these very comfortable rooms and nice rooms, and they've got this comfortable lifestyle, if you guys all make the same money and you guys all, you know, are in the military? And I used that line on him. I said, champions don't sleep on silk sheets. I can't have my Marines sleep in that way. So it makes sense. Now, you know, and look, Nate, I will get to, my aunt says she worked for 50 years, always a third or more out of her taxes. It's very interesting if you really realize that you always lose a third. Isn't that interesting? Like,
well, we got to start talking about cost segregations. You got to invest passively in some syndications. They do cost segregation study. You can write that off as a loss. It's good times.
All right, see, now you just said something, and I think I'm educated. You just said some shit I don't even know. You're going to have to educate me on that one.
Yeah, well, so the cost segregation study is essentially, when you buy an investment property, it depreciates over, you know, 29 years or 27 years or 39 years, depending on if it's residential or commercial. Basically, what that means is, the IRS assumes that the property is going to need to be replaced over 27 years. You're going to have to remodel everything, replace everything, rebuild everything, whatever. So therefore, you can write off 1/27th of the value of the home every year against your taxes because it's losing that value. And so you can basically say, like, hey, this is a $100,000 house, whatever 1/27th is, you know, I don't know, $4,000, $3,000 against my taxes. So if I made $3,000 in income, I can write that off against my income. A cost segregation study is like, let's say you buy $1 million property and you go in and you, like, let's say it's a small hotel, a little motel, whatever. You go in and you have someone come through, you pay them like $6,000, $8,000. They come through and they go, well, the furniture is only going to last 5 years. The fridges in this place are only going to last 7 years. HVAC's good for 15. And they write it all out as, you know, 5 year, 10 year, 15 year. Whatever. So instead of writing a commercial property, like a hotel would be 39 years of depreciation. So 1/39th, instead of doing that, they would say, you know, these are going to last only 5 years and then you got to replace them. So we'll make it 20% of the value of all your fridges and, you know, however that works. But then good old Donald Trump came in and said, we should accelerate depreciation. We should allow accelerated depreciation, meaning you can take 100% of that if you do a cost segregation study in year one. And then now it's 80% and then it's supposed to go to 60, but we'll see who gets elected because that might change. But essentially, I'll use a real world example. We bought a hotel for $850,000. We put another 150 into it. So we were probably in for $1 million. We did a cost segregation study and the guy said, you know, when they were all done and we accelerated the depreciation, we were able to write off $662,000 against our taxes in year one. And so essentially, there's three of us. So it was 750 or whatever. I could have made $230,000 that year and paid zero.
That is Listen. That is beautiful. And you know what I love about it? And I'm going to put it right out there. I love the fact that you're just playing with the rich people's rules. You're not cheating the system. It's not dirty. I love when people, that's just dirty. No, you're mad because you didn't have the capital or you didn't take the time. You didn't invest to figure out how to do it yourself. And then you hear somebody else doing it and you're going, well, that's bullshit. Why is it bullshit?
Do it yourself.
Let me ask this question, Dave. I'm going to get a little personal. Where'd you grow up?
Little Rock, Arkansas. Well, not Little even. Rock, little town that had a stop sign outside of Little Rock, Arkansas.
So did Daddy own all the land in town?
Daddy quit his job as a high-level accountant in San Francisco when I was 4 years old and moved to Little Rock to become a marriage counselor with a missionary project and lived on support.
So if Dad made more than $35,000-$40,000 a year, that was probably pretty good.
Yeah, I don't actually know what Dad made, but I know that we didn't eat out very often, and if we did, we got water.
Congratulate. So we're not talking I know you mentioned Trump, but we're not talking you know Dad left you with millions of dollars and you had an investment background and you had a name to work off of. You just figured it the hell out.
Yeah. I think that's actually an advantage, is that I had nothing to lose and I had a military job, so I could,
you could run the risk.
I could run the risk. 'Cause if I took a huge hit, I was still at a great job that I wasn't going to get fired from unless I did this and drove.
Right.
And, so I could take all those risks, which means I could over leverage everything. I could bet huge. And I could hope that it worked out and happened to be in a decent swing in the market. I think what I did works at any time with anyone if you buy the right properties. And I'm still buying. I bought a duplex 2 weeks ago. And I bought that duplex for almost zero down.
We're going to talk about this. Because I honestly don't understand it. And that's my wife asking, is it when you bought the hotel and all this? And I understand what she's saying when she says, did you buy it under a business or is it an LLC? Are you using LLC, S Corp, C Corp? How do you put that together, especially when it's a group of you?
Yeah, I think I have 8 LLCs now and 1 S Corp. But that's part of it, April. You've got... I probably wouldn't invest in anything like that personally, just for a liability standpoint. You could, though. So you can actually, let's say, so we just bought this hotel in Tennessee. And we brought in, I think we ended up having to raise $4.2 million to close it. And, you know, so we all contributed, but the rest of it, whatever, three and a half is other investors. And as long as they had invested prior to the end of 2023, because that was the year that we were going to do the cost segregation study, they would get full benefit for that. So we figured, I think the math was, for every $100,000 you invested in the deal, you would get between $40,000 and $44,000 back as a tax write-off, or the depreciation that you could write off against your taxes. So if you invested $100,000, $42,000, let's say, right in the middle, you could then write off against any income you made that year, which is great. 'Cause one of the guys who invested is a $300,000 a year employee, has a great job at a huge company. And so he can write off $40,000 worth of, he actually invested $500,000. So math in public, $200,000. Yeah. He can write off $210,000 against his income this year, which means that instead of paying a third $100,000 in taxes, right, he's going to pay 20 or 30, but he did some other investments too. So he'll end up paying almost nothing this year on his taxes while making an incredible amount of money. So you can do that in other ways. You can do it passively. You can invest in those kinds of deals. You can do it on single families. I don't actually ever do it on any of my single families because in Missouri, they're not super expensive. I have a holding company, and that holding company owns all the LLCs. And so the reason for it is, me and my then wife started our first LLC. And then when I bought the hotel, and it was a hotel and two apartments, that was with two friends. And so that was, we were all one third. And then I founded another LLC to buy an RV park because I'm one part and the other, Yeah. So there's three of us in that, but it's three different people. And then I have an LLC. So I have, now I've got like four or five LLCs that are just like one deal with different people.
Gotcha.
They all have ridiculous names too. I've got White Trash Weenies. I've got one of them is called, you'll love this, as a Marine, Two Boots, because both of us were young Marines when we bought it. And then I've got the D Sandwich, because it's two Daves and another guy. And I've got, I've got another one in there. Oh, One Uncle Deep. My uncle started that one and we partnered on a deal. So
real quick, I got to tell you a funny, this was probably one of the funniest things that happened to me after I retired. I was working on the railroad. I worked for Amtrak and I'm sitting at the, in the break room and this other Marine comes in and he had worked in this location before, left and came back, and great guy, name's Brian, another Marine. And we're talking, and he walks in and he's like, "Hey there, Boot." Now again, 20 years, it's been a long time since anybody called me a Boot. And folks, if you don't know what a Boot is, that means you're a young new Marine. And I looked at him and I went, and I said the same thing. I said, "Bro, it's been a long time since any motherfucker called me a Boot." I said, "When'd you go to boot camp?" And it was like September of 95. I said, "Well, look, fucking Boot." In July of 94, he was like, you could hear the air just fall out of his lungs. He was like, now this is important for Nate. Nate wants to know if you have any haunted properties, please let him know. He's into the whole paranormal investigation thing, and he would be more than happy to come out and investigate your properties for you.
I don't have any that I know of for sure, but there is one or two that God, who knows?
Suspect.
Well, we bought one. Oh my God. The White Trash Weenies, the first property they ever bought. We were buying tax liens. If you don't know what that is, basically
going absolutely. That's another thing I've started looking at. Yes.
So we bought four tax liens at that auction, and three of them paid us back, which is fine because they pay you like 8%. This year was 10% back on whatever you bet on it. So, like, all right, cool. You either get a return or you get a property. So the one that we got, though, we thought we had bid on a post office, and we actually apparently it was the parcel next door, and it is just like a cinder block shack, and it has no floor left in it. It's got homeless, and we haven't even been able to sell the thing. It might be. I mean, we're into it for like $2,000, $2,200, and we can't get rid of the thing for three. We're trying. We're like, somebody want this piece of land for $3,000? They're like, nope. Yeah.
Now with all these different deals and stuff you have, did you start like your, and my wife wants to know, I love that she's in, see, this is something we talk about often.
Yeah.
Do you have a property manager? Do you work it yourself? So did you start a property management company as another entity, or is this something like, hey, you know what? We just manage it ourselves.
No. Yeah. I do not have the bandwidth or capacity or the personality to manage myself. I'm the recruiter personality. I'm too nice. Tenants would be like, my grandma died, and I'd be like, oh, okay. And then the next month, my other grandma died. Oh, okay. And then the next month, my other grandma died, and I'd be like, son of a bitch, how many grandmas do you have?
I get it completely.
Yeah. So I hired a property manager. They are not that nice. They're
named
wonderful.
Helga? Is your property manager named Helga?
No. Jerry.
Let me know what your fucking income is. We will pay this now. Don't give me the problems. We don't want this.
Oh, they're great. She's wonderful. She handles everything. I do have the duplex I just bought is going to be managed by a friend. Because it's way further west than my manager will go. And he self-manages out there. So I was like, you want to take another one? I'll pay you. And so he's going to manage it for me.
See, that's good stuff. So, okay. Now, folks, you've heard us say it a couple of times, and normally you'll hear me say we're getting close to closing the bar in about 5 minutes, but I know this is going to go longer, so I'm going to say it now. We are getting close. So look, if you're finding me, Dave through me, or me through Dave, like, share, follow, take a moment right now. Those of you that are watching, share it to all your yard sale sites, everywhere that's out there. Get this message out. This is a conversation that I think all of us are interested in. And if you don't understand what's going to happen at the end of this year, everybody's pucker factor at the end of this year is going to be super tight. And if you don't know what that means, it means nobody's going to want to spend money at the end of this year. So if you had some disposable income, this is the time where you probably could pick something up at a fairly reasonable time. It's an election year, and people get scared during election years because they don't know who's going to stay in office. Even though right now, I don't support either one of the octogenarians that are attempting to run my country. Remember, folks, I said octogenarians. Keep that in mind. You wouldn't let your grandparents drive to the end of the block by themselves, but will give the button to 280-year-olds and be like, you guys are fine. I don't understand that in any way, shape, or form. But this, what we're going to talk about now is buying with no money. You hear it all the time. You see these infomercials. Hey, buy my book. I'll show you right how to buy this property at no money down. Don't worry about it. We'll show you exactly how to do it. And then you find out what it is you need to have already bought some property and you got to blow through any equity you have. And my wife has a great question. Is there a book, Dave? Get it out, Dave. Show the book. Look at that.
The No BS Guide to Military Life.
There's the book.
I have a planner too.
Is there a planner in there? Let me see the planner.
It's called same cover type, but the Military Millionaire Planner.
So, babe, we'll get these. We'll get Dave to.
I also have a stack of fake dollar bills for when I want to look like a guru.
Look at that! Look at that baller life. And then I agree. The Rock, he said there should be an age limit to be the president. There's an age limit to get into the presidency. There should be an age limit to hold that office until you're 80 years old, and that's who's voting for him. But let's go ahead and get into this. Educate me, brother, because I hear it all the time, and I'm like, I see properties all the time where I'm like, especially in the area where we're in the capital region, I'll post. Yeah, look, my wife's already bullying me on my own show. Sean, post the link. Like, she never calls me by my first name. I'm getting bullied right now. I'm getting bullied by my wife on my own show.
Her engagement's phenomenal. This is great.
She's upstairs and she's bullying me. She's really into this because she normally she's like, I've already fallen asleep and gone to bed like before shows. And I'm like, did you like it? She's like, I was asleep.
It was great.
But tell me about, how do people really do it? Because like I said, I you hear these stories and then you find out really it's taking equity out of your home. And then you're like, well, I don't have a home to start with.
No. I mean, straight up zero. Well, there's a lot of ways to do it, and most of them involve off-market deals. Whether you're just networking and you find someone who owns a house that's willing to sell it, or you can do it with an agent involved, but agents are 95% of agents suck. And so they don't know what they're talking about. They're going to get in the way of your negotiation. You're not going to be able to have a real conversation. You're not going to know why someone needs to sell a house. And it makes all of this harder. But the ways to do it are either through just, they all involve being creative. So for example, the one that I bought last week, 2 weeks ago, I offered 100K and there was about roughly $15,000 worth of crap that needed to be done to the house that I found out about once we did the inspection. And I was like, hey, instead of you doing that, can you just cut me, like it's called seller credit. Can you just give me $15,000 back at closing table? My bank lends 85%. So I just took the 15 he gave me and put that as the down payment, created it out of nothing. And I had to pay the closing costs and fees, which was $3,200. So that's all I paid. Now I've done it before where let's say we were going to go under contract for 100 and I'm like, yo, I'll give you 120 if you give me the 20 back at closing. And so, essentially I'm offering more. My bank sees the contract and I'm giving that. It's just creating that down payment out of nothing. But the easier way to do it is seller finance. And you can do let's say you have someone who has 50% equity in the home. You say, hey, can you carry a second, meaning that they're taking a second position lien on the property for whatever that down payment would be. So if you're buying a property for 100K and your bank is going to loan 85, hey, will you carry back, can I pay you 15% of this back at 5% interest for the next 10 years? And then they allow you to do that. And the bank gives them the money for the other 85%. And I'm into it for nothing. And then I just make payments to both them and the bank every month until their 15% is paid off. the even crazier example of seller financing, and this is really rare, but I've done it twice, is like, let's say this is all negotiation, and this is why agents get in the way. I had a seller once, he wanted 50K for a house that had been a fire. It was not worth anywhere near that. And people were offering him like $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 for this thing. He was pissed. And I was like, dude, I can do 30 or 29. And he was like, nope. We went back and forth. I got up to 32. He would not budge from 36. And I was like, basically, I was like, you know what, man? I was like, I can make 36,000 work, but I can't pay it to you now. I was like, what if I buy the property and I pay you the 36,000 like you want instead of 32? Because it's not that he needed the 36 right away. He just didn't want to lose the negotiation anymore.
Right.
He wanted to be stuck at 36. He didn't want to go down anymore. So I was like, what if I give you the 36, but I do it in 12 months or when the house sells, whichever comes first. I was like, because it was a flip. And he's like, well, what does that look like? I was like, it just looks like I cut you a check for 36,000 whenever I sell the house. And if I pay it past 12 months, I cut it to you before the house sells. And so I bought that house on a seller financing loan, which was 0% down, zero interest, and no payments for 12 months. And I will say, I can't lie, I did have to put some money down because he didn't tell me about property taxes, and he owed $600 in property taxes.
So you had to cover the property tax.
I had to cut a check for six. Actually, he was supposed to cover it, but I just didn't care enough to like lose the deal on closing day. So I cut a check for $600, and then I bought the house and I renovated it completely. And I flipped it. And when I sold him, he got 36,000 out of my profits. And so,
I want to make sure I understand that. So in a situation like that, it wasn't like he was just carrying the note and carrying the house. There was still a closing. There was still everything. It was still in your name. Absolutely. He was just the financing. And if you didn't make your payments, just like a bank, he had become the bank in a sense.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's really
the property back.
So really in these situations, when people talk about, oh, you can do it for no money down, you can do it for zero, a lot of it is about negotiating and the seller becoming the bank is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Yes. So instead of putting the money down, you're just paying the seller instead of a bank. Now the other way to do it, and there's probably other ways on top of this, but the other way to do it is private money. So let's say you have $100,000 and you're not doing anything with it. And I was like, hey, Sean, I have a property. It's 70 grand. It's going to cost me 25 to renovate it. And then I'm going to do a refinance and I'm going to pull all the money back out. And it'll probably appraise for 120, 130, 140, whenever I'm done renovating it. I'll be able to take 85% of that. So I should be able to pull 115 out. What if I pay you normally when I do this, I pay 1 point and 10% interest. So let's say I pay a point is 1% of the loan. 100%. So I'd pay you $1,000 plus 10% interest for every month I hold it. But I'd rather just pay it to you at the end when I'm done with the project, because I don't think it makes sense to borrow $100,000 from someone and then give them $1,000 back. And then like, right. It's like I need that for the project. So I usually, you know, I find people with like a self-directed IRA that they can invest in various things, but they're not paying taxes right. on, and they can't use the money. So they don't need the money. So it's like, hey, if I pay you at the end, it doesn't matter because you're not going to do anything with the money anyway. It's sitting in a retirement fund.
I actually have that.
Oh, well, there you go. So let's say you had 100 grand in your self-directed IRA and you were doing nothing with it. And I found a project that was, we'll say, going to cost me 55 to buy and 25 to renovate. So I'm all into it for $80,000 and it appraises at 120. I can pull 100,000 out of it. I'm just, that math's wrong, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Then I just pay you the $800 plus the 10% interest for every month that it took me to finish that project. And I've got a property that the bank now has a loan on, and I might've been able to pull some extra money out of, but I never put a dollar into it.
Can you still look, I got to ask this question. Can you still buy properties in Missouri for $100,000?
Oh, you don't want to know.
No, seriously, I do. Because right now I'm hearing you use these numbers, and in my head I'm like, is he just using easy math, you know, math for Marines, or is that a real thing? Because I'm in upstate New York, which is,
yeah,
like if I wanted to touch anything, even if I went to the most rural communities, we have some really great areas like we call it Schoharie County. And I can buy property at some pretty good prices, but you're talking houses out in the Midwest.
I am under contract right now, totally off market, in a podunk town for 14 single family houses and a vacant lot for $350,000.
Get the fuck out of here.
So it's like 25K a house. Now, granted, we're going to put 145,000 into renovating them.
I don't care.
But it'll probably still, they'll probably only be worth 70 or 80K when we're done each.
The math still works. The
math absolutely works. We'll break in about $2,500 a month off those net once we're done.
Now in a situation, now you read Kiyosaki's book. Kiyosaki says, buy it, keep it, rent it, make money forever. I've heard you say flip a couple of times. What's your norm there?
Yeah, I've dabbled in everything. My favorite strategies are either to just buy and hold, or to do what I call a BRRRR, which is like buy, renovate, rehab, buy, renovate, rent, and then refinance and pull all your money out. So like you do exactly what I just told you. I'd find someone to lend me the money. I'd completely renovate the place, put a tenant in place, use the bank to refinance, pull all my money back out and pay you off.
That's genius. That's actually what my dad used to do. He bought his first property, got a tenant in there, bought it outright. It was a Baltimore City home. I think he paid like 17 or 18,000, pulled all of his money out, went and bought another one. At least one property was always completely paid off. The other ones would have it, but my dad would Section 8 his places.
Oh, that's smart.
Because in Baltimore City, and I'll never forget having the conversation one time with him, he's like, yeah, these guys haven't paid their rent in like 6 months. I'm like, then why the hell are we still coming here? He's like, son, because their portion of the rent is $25. Section 8 pays me $700. I am not chasing $25 as long as I'm getting $700. I'm like, oh, he's like, yep. Yeah, because once
the government always pays.
Well, what he told me was once you go after them for their $25, anybody on that program knows what the process is, and they complain. Section 8 then puts your money into an escrow account and freezes it till whatever that complaint is addressed, and you send them the paperwork showing that it's addressed, and then they finally release your money. So it could be a couple of months and you're out of everything. You'll eventually get it, but you'll be out of money. And the going one was like, I've got cockroaches. So Section 8 will instantly stop your money, and you've got to send exterminators in. You've got to find one willing to go into that housing. It's a whole thing in and of itself. Yeah. That's wow. So we almost skipped over the no BS. Like, so pull it back out pull it out, Dave. Dave,
let me see for you.
Whip it out for me. So talk a little bit about the no BS.
Man, it was going to literally just be the no bullshit guide. But then someone told me you can't run ads for your book on Amazon if it has a swear word in it. So I was like, oh, that makes sense. Okay, so we'll make it the BS. Nope, that still doesn't count. I still can't run ads.
Really?
Yeah. But whatever. That book, what is it? Manson's book.
Marilyn Manson?
No, I think it's like Nick Manson. He wrote, that's going to drive me nuts. Some book that has the F word in it, but he has like an asterisk.
Oh, you're talking about the, I know.
Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. There we go.
The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And
that was the example.
And a book about hope. Everything's fucked. I've read both of them. I know.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Sorry. Yeah. So I'm like, I can visualize it. Yeah, they are. And he can't run ads on Amazon because of the F word. No, he's doing fine. Yeah. He's a New York Times bestseller or whatever. So I wanted to write a book, and I couldn't come up with what to write, and I just settled on, what if I outlined everything I wish I'd known when I joined the military? And that's what I wrote. So it's, a lot of it is pertaining to new guys. So it's like, how to pick your MOS or not. It's not even that. It's like, what are some great secondary schools to go to? Why I think recruiting would serve you better than drill instructor. Why, even though it's, I still think harder than drill instructor.
Have you ever, all right, folks, we're going to make a left turn for a minute, and Nate, I'm going to get to your question because it's coming up on that time. Recruiting duty is the only place, and you came out, obviously years after I did, Recruiting Dude is the only place where I have watched Marines who have taken live fire, who have returned fire, cry, break down, and literally quit at Marines physically quit because an 18-year-old told the doctor he had ADD. Do you know what I'm saying?
Have you heard about what they're doing now?
With that program?
Oh my God. They opened Pandora's box and they can't shut it.
Well, that's the whole thing. So being an 8412, I know a couple of guys that just recently retired from that world. And one of them was like, we've had that for years. They should know what they're doing by now. I said, look, man, stop. No used to mean numerous opportunity. Yes, your enlistment stopped. The kids that I put in the Marine Corps that fought the start of the Gulf War, that, you know, stood truly on that line and defended the country, those kids I put in could not enlist today. Could not join. Are you one?
I separated my shoulder while in the delayed entry program. I wouldn't have been able to join.
Dude, I put a kid in. I put one kid in. Here's a great example. He is, last I talked to him, I actually named one of my own sons after him.
Oh, there you go.
He was the first Marine that I put in that went off to the Gulf War and returned home safely. So my son, Tyler Murphy, is named after Tyler Katolka. So when Tyler was in high school, he had a situation where he was upset over girlfriend passing away, or not passing away, but girlfriend breaking up with him. Mom took him to the doctor. They were like, yeah, you're okay. It's just, you'll be all right. But they put him on this program where at the time he was like 14 or 15. Hey, you won't be able to own a firearm. He's 14, 15. Who's thinking about that?
Jesus.
Goes into the Marine Corps. The dude is a badass. He's an absolute badass, certifiable. Like, I watched him play rugby and fold a kid in half, like physically hit a kid and watch the kid go. And I was like, holy shit, I'm glad he never hit me. And I'm a staff sergeant at the time. I'm like, well, glad he didn't hit me like that. He goes off. He's, you know, 03, not 31, goddamn machine gunner. I can't think of what it was.
31 is machine gunner.
It's 31 machine gunner. I was trying to think of the difference between machine gunner and mortarman.
51.
Folks, this show's going over, so suck it up.
yeah, I'll ramble as long as you let me.
But he goes in, and this is why I say, like, they don't know what they're doing. So he does all these things, honorably discharged, gets out, and he's going to be in this job that's going to require him to carry a firearm again. It's a high-level federal job with – and we used to always think that top secret was big. You want to know what the real security clearance is? Get a top secret with the Department of Energy. That's the real clearance. Oh, you didn't know that one, Dave?
I know top secret SCI, which I had. And I know there's a Yankee White if you like work with the president.
There is nothing like the Department of Energy clearance. Nothing. I promise you.
It's so weird.
The Department of Energy top secret clearance is like straight pucker factor. So he goes to get it, and they're like, hey, you've got this thing. The Marine Corps couldn't find it. The federal government couldn't find it. Department of Energy goes, hey, you got this thing on your record. This is a kid that was and ends up getting expunged, has a doctor come out, the whole nine yards. But that's an example of a kid who defended this country, did everything he could because he was 14. Some idiot doctor put a tag on him that made no sense, and he defends our country. And he couldn't serve today.
My favorite. And so I had two. I had one kid. He tore his labrum junior year, had surgery. So freshman, sophomore year, he went state as a wrestler. Junior year, tears his labrum, has surgery. Senior year, he wins state as a wrestler at 215. And then he goes up to MEPS and he does 25 pull-ups. I'm like, clearly his shoulder works. Never got the waiver approved. Ended up going Army. My second favorite, this kid, Andrew Bandolo. Andrew ran cross country at college. Like, he was on a D3 full ride cross country, used an inhaler when he was like 11 for like a year. And he said something at MEPS because he's too honest for his own good. And they were like, we need a pulmonary functions test. I'm like, okay, cool. So we send it to him. They're like, this isn't good. We need a full spirometry. It's like another $3,000. They won't pay for it. I'm like, neither me or the kid is going to drop $3,000 on this. I'm sorry. And so he never enlists. But I remember when we were trying to fight the waiver, I dragged him to the Marines full PFT. I was like, all right, they're like, what's he doing? I was like, he's an applicant. He's my asthma waiver. And he's going to run the PFT with us. And I was like, I'll tell you, because they were so mad that I kept throwing his stuff up and bitching about PMA and everything. I was like, look, I'll tell you what. And this is like to my mate, to my, you know, major butler and like the CO and everything. I was like, hey, if a single Marine beats this guy on the PFT, I'll drop his package. But nobody's going to beat him. Dude ran a 14.32. And I'm like, you're telling me this motherfucker has asthma? Are you kidding me? Like, push his waiver. So they pushed it. Never got approved. But I'm like,
bro, it never made sense to me. Now, at the same time, you tell that story. I got a kid approved who had a felony Grand Theft Auto in 20 minutes motor T driver.
Hell yeah. He's not going to steal. Nobody's going to steal a Humvee. They suck.
I did that. I had a girl who had a hole in her heart. She could do 17 dead hang pull-ups. I got her approved. I could get a waiver. I was a waiver. I've two kids with one who had a seizure after falling out of a tree, and one with no shit epilepsy. I got them approved because he hit. If you ever were to look at the ICD codes, folks, if you're still hanging with us, I know this is boring to you. This is just two Marines that are talking about bullshit on recruiting.
We appreciate you though.
He had I love you right now, but he had the ICD-9 codes. And now I think it's like 13 or 14, whatever the codes are now. He hit every widget on that code. And what was crazy was his aunt was a nurse with an epileptologist. So when we went to go run his waiver and we sent his stuff up, the MEPS doc on the EEG saw like this little blip on the EEG and was like, I need this approved. The epileptologist who I saw the guy's picture and I spoke to him, looked straight up like, what's the movie Ghostbusters? when he's like, are you the key? I can't think of his name right now. Not Martin Short. Oh God, I can't think of his name right now. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh yeah.
But he looked just like that guy. And he's like,
Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis looked just like Rick Moranis and wrote an entire like article basically explaining to this MEPS doctor how, because this kid at these ages had epilepsy, his EEG for the rest of his life will always have this blip in this location. It's never going to change. It's never going to be different. Doesn't matter what you guys say. It's always going to be there. He does not have epilepsy anymore. He is cured. Like, he wrote this. We got the kid in.
That's awesome.
I did it. Look, folks, if you're hanging with us, you're still there. I got to ask Nate's question. This is very important.
Yeah, let's do it.
Nate is a good friend of mine. Love him to death. Horrible fantasy football picker. He always takes four kickers in the first round as soon as he can. And never understand it. In a minute here, he's going to send a message if he's still paying attention. That's bullshit. I don't do that. You're an asshole. But he always picks all these kickers. I don't know why he does it. You know, it's ridiculous. But Nate wants to know, if I can find where he put it at, did you have a favorite MRE?
Oh, all right.
We always had one.
I assume we're talking normal because I've had the cold weather MREs and they smoke everything.
Now, I've never had a cold weather. See, I told you, full of crap.
Come hang out. I got two boxes of them in the garage that I
really
cold did not borrow from a Bridgeport mission at all. They're amazing. Because it's a real meal. It's just dehydrated, you know, eggs or dehydrated ramen or dehydrated whatever. You add boiling water and it's real food instead of an MRE. They had one. Man, they probably only had this one for a few years, but it was around when we were in Afghanistan. It was the buffalo chicken. And I liked
it because
it came with rice. And so you'd mix the rice and the buffalo chicken into the big bag. You roll the bag down and then you'd crunch a bunch of crackers up and throw it in there. And that one was great. Now, outside of that, the normal meals, I'm a chili with beans or chili mac guy.
Okay. Beef stew.
That's not one that I was ever huge on. I'm not a big stew guy in general, though.
So I think it's endeared to me. So when I joined in 94, we didn't have MRE. Till back in my day, we didn't have MRE heaters. We didn't have the bread in there. We didn't have any of that. So I was in Paris Island, and I put my MRE in the top of my pack, and we went and ran the, that CCR or whatever it was, that run where it was like war belt, butt pack. Yeah. We did that run and we came back, and you know, it's September in South Carolina. I remember opening it up and the fucking thing was hot and we had never had hot MREs. And, but then once you really got into it, if you took the beef stew and you traded for jalapeno cheese and added the jalapeno cheese to the beef stew, cracker and put the Tabasco in it, brother, that was a meal fit for a king. You're not going to shit for a week with everything that's in there, but it is absolute glory in that container right there. Listen, folks, Dave and I, you know, I think I might have found a new friend for life here, because this is somebody that I can talk to. We've chewed similar dirt from different locations. I love the fact that he's doing the real estate thing. This is something I'm highly, highly interested in. Hopefully my son listened to, because that's something he's interested in, getting ready to make some moves here, especially with, have you seen the new FHA thing where you can do it for like, what is it? FHA just went to 5% or 3%.
FHA has always been like 3.5%. It might be the conventional one down.
One of them went down to like such a ridiculously low number. It's the one where you have to occupy the property.
Either a conventional primary or an FHA. Yeah.
It's to the point that, you know, you could buy a 4-unit home. You can buy up anything over 2 units, and as long as you occupy one,
that's my favorite strategy. There is nothing better than buying a fourplex, living in one, renting the others, and replacing your living costs. That is the fastest way for anybody who can. It's harder with a family, but anyone who can afford to do it, like from a mental standpoint, you get in for 0 to 5% down using a VA, FHA, or conventional. You buy it, you live in one unit, you rent the other three out. They cover your cost of living, which is your biggest expense. And then as long as you're not a dumbass, you save that and you use that for your next investment property.
That's my whole thing. Look, folks, check out what Dave's got going on. Check out the Military Millionaire. You can find him on Facebook. He's got about 1,200 or 2,500 followers on Facebook. He's got his LinkedIn profile.
65,000 in a Facebook group I own.
There you go. 65,000 in a Facebook group. That might be a country song too. 65,000 and a Facebook group. We got to do another one. Salute. Oh. I keep pouring more.
Oh, that's not fair. I didn't bring the bottle in.
Yeah, I have a bottle. I'm telling you, man, there's a whole bar here. But make sure you're checking out Dave. If you're finding me through Dave or Dave through me, make sure you take the time, give him a like, go find his social media, go see the things he's got going on. Give him the love. If you're finding me through Dave, do the exact same thing. Look, that like, share, follow, all those kind of things that we talk about on here. It may sound cliche. I know we ran a little long today, folks, but it is absolutely worth it. This is a topic, especially with the economy that we've got coming up here. I see it. If you can afford to buy real estate, that people can't afford to buy houses right now because the numbers are so high as far as property costs, especially on the right coast. I mean, obviously it sounds like move to where Dave's at. You can buy like 50 places for $30 and a happy meal, but,
you'll live with crackheads, but it's all good.
Look, crackheads, listen to me. Crackheads cut grass like nobody's business.
It's true. They do great maintenance too.
You can do so much work. Crackhead will be like, I do all that shit for you. Don't worry about it.
You can get a crackhead to replace a toilet for less than the cost of the toilet, because they'll steal it from someone.
That's what I'm talking about.
I don't want to know where you got the toilet, but thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you. And hey, $50 off your rent. So make sure you're giving him a like, share, follow. If you're joining us next week, as we do this every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Next week is going to be a little bit of an issue with this. Dave, you may want to tune in next week. We have Dr. Tony Liu, L-I-U-E. She is an ex-gynecologist, now cartoonist, sex educator, relationship coach, speaker, Asian mental health advocate, and global nomad based in Thailand. Everything about that just sounds like a problem.
Did you say Dia Liu, L-U-E?
L-L-I-U. It's Tony, T-O-N-I, and then L-I-U-M-D. And she's like, so, and what's great about her, she is a contributor. She speaks about a lot of different topics, changes, digital nomadism, Asian tiger parenting, minimalism, mental health, feminism, women's health, and medical healthcare system and training. Absolutely cannot wait to talk to her and see what she's got going on. That'll be next week at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Make sure you're joining us. All those likes and follows and shares, everybody who joined us, we had a great following today. Now, I know, Dave, this is like episode 226, I think. And don't log off afterwards. We'll talk for a minute afterwards. I know you binge watched and listened to all 226 episodes. Just absorbed it all. You're like,
every podcast I've ever been on, I listen to
everyone. And I respect that completely. just sucking every one of them in. So then you know that the next part of this is the guest always gets the final word. So what's our final word there, Dave?
Man, put me on the spot to say something smart. Final word.
Another Marine gunny. Say whatever the fuck you want to.
You know, honestly, so the best advice that I've ever heard and that I've been giving people lately, and we'll leave everyone with that, is no matter what your goals are, this applies, but especially in my world, right? Filter the advice that you receive through the lens of, does this person have the life that I want in that realm? So the example I give is, you wouldn't want your mom coaching you how to be a UFC fighter, unless your mom happens to be Ronda Rousey. She has your best interest at heart. She loves you. She's amazing, but she doesn't know shit about fighting. So you would go to a professional coach and you would ignore everything your mom says and be like, yeah, I got you. Love you. But you would understand it's in your best interest. But for some reason, when you get into like real estate investing, your mom, who's never owned a rental property, tells you it's stupid. And you're like, oh man, my mom must be right. No, go listen to the guy who has 1,000 units or, you know, 1,000,000, whatever. And is actually living the life that you want. And then that person will coach you on it. And your mom still has your best interest at heart. She's just not an expert in that realm.
Alrighty, folks, be sure to push your stool in. This has been a Second Front podcast presentation, found on Apple, Spotify, and wherever podcasts can be found.